this truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. This is Theology Thursday. Typically, we look at the news of the day from a Christian worldview. Today, we look at the source of the Christian worldview, God's Word. The Ten Commandments, we've been looking at them. They appear in the Bible in Exodus chapter 20. And this time, as we think through them, each sermon, we're not taking them in order, but we're looking at one commandment after another. And this time we're going to consider the 10th, you shall not covet your neighbor's goods. But I'd like to run through them and take note this time that they appear to be in two groups. The first three deal with God and the last six with men. And then there's a transition commandment, the fourth, in between the ones for God and the ones for men. And that sort of deals with both. Because God rested on the seventh day, so too should man. And so let your kids off one day a week and your employees. But then again, that's if we're under the law. That's why we work our kids so hard. So before we get into the 10th commandment, I'd like us to notice the progression in order of the commands in these two groups, of the commands toward God and toward men. Imagine the first command is like a heading. And the heading is, have no other gods before me. And then that's the first command. And then beneath that are a couple subheads. Don't make any carved images and don't take the Lord's name in vain. And those commands seem to go in a progression of severity from most severe to less severe. Have no other gods before me. That's paramount. That's the main heading. And then don't make any carved images. That's really important too. Any false idols. And then don't take God's name in vain. And then, oh yeah, remember not to work one day a week. And then we see a same progression of severity in the second group regarding the commands for men. Now the heading there is honor your father and your mother. And that's the first of these six commands regarding men. Honor your father and your mother. You know, people often ask, well, why does the God of the Bible say he wants to be worshiped? Why is that? Is he weak that he needs worship? What's with that? And the response to that is God tells us to honor him for the same reason he tells us to honor our parents. It's not because our parents are weak and they need the honor of their kids. It's because if kids are to grow up to be happy and healthy, they need to honor their parents, honor and respect authority. Otherwise, you're broken and something is wrong inside. And so for the same reason we honor good parents, some parents are terrible, even criminal, and they, of course, would get far less honor than good parents. But for the same reason we honor good parents, so too we honor God. And that's why God tells us to worship him for our benefit. Well, this second group of commands are related to men, and they start out, honor your father and your mother. And then they go on, you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, don't bear false witness, and don't covet your neighbor's goods. And notice there too, God lists them in order of severity, the most severe first. Do not murder. And then do not commit adultery. And then do not steal. So these three commands that have to do, actually, they're not just sins if you violate these commands. They're even crimes. They're crimes. And they're not sins of the heart or the mind or verbal sins, but they're actually actions. Murdering, unfaithfulness, and stealing. But then after those three, then we have two more regarding human interaction. The first doesn't prohibit an action,
but it prohibits certain words. In the first of these last two, the ninth command says, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. So don't lie to hurt your neighbor. Don't lie about your neighbor. And the tenth command deals not with your actions, not what you can do with your hands or your feet, and not even with your tongue, but with your mind. The tenth commandment, the full text of the tenth commandment appears in Exodus 20, verse 17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. Now, if the Bible were written today, God would say, don't covet your neighbor's house, your neighbor's wife, his cars, his four-wheel drive SUV. Don't covet his job, his money, or his high-speed internet connection. To covet is to lust after. To covet, it's the desire for that which belongs to another in a blameworthy way. It's a guilty wish, a wish that you could possess another man's possessions instead of him. You know, there are some Christians who think that Jesus did away with the law, and we don't think that at our church. They think that when he came, he gave the Sermon on the Mount, and we're going to turn to the Sermon on the Mount, just to two verses of it right now, in Matthew 5, 27. But they think, well, Jesus did away with the law, or he corrected the law because the law had some mistakes or some extremes, and he was fixing it. And we completely object to that line of thinking because, no, the truth is that Jesus upheld the law. He said that not one jot or tittle of the law would pass away, not one dot of the I or crossing of the T. It would all be fulfilled. The law came from God, and it was true, and that men should obey it. Now, afterward, after Christ ascended into heaven, and the Apostle Paul came, and then there was some tension over law versus grace in the book of Acts, and that was resolved a certain way that we won't get into right now. But Jesus in the Gospels, he never actually mentioned the word grace, and he always taught the law, and he taught people to obey the law. So when Christians who try to figure out this grace stuff, and they get a little confused, and they think, oh, well, Jesus did away with the law, or he corrected the law, or rebuked the law, or something in the Gospels. That's not true. And one of the verses they use to suggest that is in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus said, you have heard that it was said, do not murder, but I say to you, do not be angry without cause. And we'll look at two of those right here, Matthew 27 and 28. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. That's the 10th commandment right there. That's not a new law. Jesus didn't come up with some new law to present an improvement on the old law. Not at all. What Jesus did was he gave the correct interpretation, because men are very good at twisting the law or diluting it. And so that's what men did. And so they got away with all kinds of crimes and sins and still maintaining that they were keeping the law. And Jesus pointed out, you guys are breaking the law when you covet. Now, of course, you could admire success in another man or any number of positive traits he may have, and you may choose to emulate those qualities. And that's not coveting. If I look at Kent and I see how sharp he is at computers and understanding technical things, and I've tried to program and I always have bugs I can't resolve, and he sells his software thousands of dollars all over the world. And I say, I want to be more like that, or more like Art and how successful he is, or Gordon and how he's able to interact with people who disagree and get them to listen. And I go and they end up hitting me. And I can look at traits or qualities in different people, or even what kind of house somebody has. I say, you know, Cheryl and I have been living in a basement since I met her for 5 years, and we'd like to live above ground someday. And so we visit our friends, and some of them have beautiful homes, and we work hard and save and buy a home. Now, is that coveting? No, those things are not coveting. In the Bible, there's a different worldview than you have in the Eastern religions, where they view pleasures as sinful and wealth. Hindu mystics will mortify their body and try to experience pain. And the more pain they experience, the holier they are. The Bible encourages us to love God and serve Him and to enjoy our lives, not to put the enjoyment of physical pleasures above spiritual truth. But God has given us food to enjoy. He doesn't only say eat. Sometimes He says have a feast, have a celebration. And He's given us marriages and homes and not only permission, but encouragement to accumulate wealth, to work hard and be thrifty. And so these things are pretty neat. And we could look at those in other people and say, you know, I wish I was the kind of guy that worked hard and was responsible so I could have a car that's reliable and comfortable. My car has no air conditioning and it breaks down all the time. Right? So if somebody is young and starting out in life or struggling and they look at a friend, somebody in the church who's doing better, they could use that in a positive way, and it doesn't have to be a sinful coveting. Coveting would be if I want what's his, and I resent that he has it, and I wish that I had it. Well, that's where we get into trouble. Now, when you desire to possess the other man's goods, when you don't want your own wife, you want his wife. When you don't want to make your own money, you'd like to somehow take his money. That's when you're hurting yourself and you're headed for big trouble. And as Christians, we know we are not under the law, those of us here in this church, and that we live by grace and not by the law. And does that mean, therefore, we could sin and it doesn't hurt us? No, it doesn't mean that at all. And we recognize that when we sin, it hurts us, it hurts me, those around me, and it hurts God. It grieves the Lord. So even though we're not under the law, we still want to recognize sin and avoid it, but we realize we'll never avoid it by tacking a bunch of rules up on the wall and saying, okay, I got to keep those rules. It'll never happen. We'll only avoid sin by developing a loving relationship with God, with our family members, and other Christians, and through the edification that comes from love and relationship, that's how we overcome sin. Not by trying really hard. Because if it's the forces of evil up against your will, guess who's going to win? You're going to lose. You cannot will yourself to overcome temptation. But you can love God, and He can love you in such a way that overcoming sin can be a daily reality in our lives. Now, some of the commands that God gives in the law and in the Ten Commandments are more obvious than others. One, like don't work on the seventh day, on Saturday, that's not very intuitive. But others, like don't murder, steal, commit adultery, you see cultures all over the world and throughout history, they uphold this basic morality that God put in the Ten Commandments. When there are issues of fundamental morality and criminality, whether people are Christians or not, they got those in their culture, typically. But keep holy the Sabbath day, that hasn't been shared by any culture outside of the Judeo-Christian world to the extent that it has. Because that's symbolic, it's not fundamentally moral. But then there's another command that unbelievers might never know was a law unless it was put in the law, and that is do not covet. The Apostle Paul deals with this in Romans chapter 7. And if you'd like to turn there, we'll look at two verses, Romans 7, 6 and 7. You know, even many liberals recognize that murder is absolutely wrong. Not all liberals, but quite a few recognize that murder is absolutely wrong. When we get to some of the other commandments, they get more dissension. But how many would be able to figure out on their own that coveting was wrong? I think there's a lot of people in the world who would never agree to that coveting is wrong. But Paul says this, Romans 7, verse 6. But now we have been delivered from the law, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of the Spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? See, Paul says we've been delivered from the law. We're not under it anymore. We now live by grace, because living by grace is better than living by the law. And that's really neat. We're thrilled to hear that. But does that make us think that the law is bad? Is there something wrong with the law? And Paul says, no way. Certainly not, in verse 7. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law, for I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. Now, God wrote the law on our hearts. And that's why cultures all over the world have rules against murder and stealing, even though they're not Christian and they don't read the Ten Commandments or the Bible. They still have laws against that because God put the law on our hearts in our conscience. But even though there's a basic sense of right and wrong in human beings, because we've sinned and we no longer have the perfection that God made us with, then we sometimes get confused. We get confused, and on the edges, we may be uncertain of whether some things are right and wrong. And because God put in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not covet, Paul says, that's how I know it's wrong to covet. I might have been able to figure it out on my own with the glimpse of truth that God put in me when he made me. But some things are more difficult. And he said, praise the Lord that God took the time to give us a law that made it very clear what behavior is wrong and what behavior is acceptable. Now, according to the Bible, we have judges in our society, and they have to have qualifications. They need a degree, typically, from law school. In our experience, that disqualifies them from being a judge. But in the Bible, there are qualifications. What does it take to be a judge? And I'd like to read to you one verse of part of the qualifications of being a judge in Exodus chapter 18, verse 21. Moreover, you shall select from all the people able men, this is to be a judge, able men such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over the people. Do you hate covetousness? Do you hate it when somebody says, man, they shouldn't pay professional sports guys millions of dollars? That's not right. Do you hate that when they say it? I hate that because it's envy. They're bitter. They wish they had some of the money that the NFL generated. Now, somebody might rightly say, our country is got its priorities out of whack. And kids grow up worshiping sports idols. That's true. And that's a problem. But it should not be a problem to us if someone else is making a lot of money. A million? A billion? If Bill Gates makes billions? Great. Good for him. Maybe I could sell him something. So we should hate covetousness and what it does in its forms, like socialism and communism, that people are envious of the money their neighbors have. So they go to the government and say, will you take some of my neighbor's money and give it to me? Because I want some free health care. And my neighbor has worked hard his whole life. He's got a lot of money. He doesn't need it all. And I'd like some of it. That's covetousness. That's a huge part of what makes American politics work. There is a verse in Exodus chapter 34, where God shows that, in a way, I'll read you the verse, Exodus 34, 24, but he shows that, in a way, governments can entice people to covet. And that's what we see going on here. But he shows it in a reverse way, because he says, I will enlarge your borders of your country, neither will any man covet your land when they go to worship the Lord. What is he saying there? God is saying there will be plenty of land for everyone in the country that I'm giving you, so that men will not covet one another's land, because they'll have land. Now, in our country, if you look on the East Coast, there's, relatively speaking, very few patches of federal land. You come out west, and there are millions of acres of federal land. Why is it that way? Why is there almost no federal land back east and so much out west? Well, the politicians got entrenched. They got a little greedy. And they said to Nevada, all right, you want to be a state? We'll let you in, but we want 70% of your land. And so Nevada sort of stuck without their own army. Okay. And the same thing happened in Utah and Arizona and New Mexico and state after state. And there's tremendously high real estate values right now. In Denver, the average home is $250,000 in Denver. That's painful for a lot of people. There's so much land in America that could be made available for people to have homes on, for schools, for kids. So much land. But it's being hoarded by the federal government. And God said, I will enlarge your borders. I will give you more land so men will not covet the land of one another. And if the government does the opposite and constricts the amount of land available, then it entices men to sin and to covet and toward envy. And then the politics of envy further empowers the government. And you see, the basic morality that's in the Bible, in the Ten Commandments, it's not just for Sunday school. It's not just for church. It's for the family, it's for the job, and it's for the government. And as Christians, generally, we've forgotten that as a Christian community, so that over the decades, we have given up the wisdom that God put in the Bible for how to run a culture and how to run a government. We've given that up and we've turned that over to the wicked. We've told them, we'll use your principles for governance, because we have forgotten what God wrote in the Bible. That's what we've done as a church. Government can entice men to covet, as ours does. Our form of government runs on covetousness, both in the electorate, in us, and in the elected. For candidates seek to lord it over other men, and they covet power. And that's what propels them into a political career, because they want power over their neighbors. And therefore, those candidates, they manipulate the voters, they cajole, entice, bribe to get what they want. And we, the people, the electorate, envying our neighbor's wealth, we vote for candidates who will transfer that wealth. So now we get some of it. Well, that's all a problem. And it's all a violation of the 10th command, thou shalt not covet. So when we witness to unbelievers, we can use that and we can show them, you think you're good enough to get into heaven, but have you broken this law? Have you broken this law? Have you broken this law? And you could start at the top, and if you've got some boyfriend that brought his girlfriend for an abortion, you might be able to get down to the bottom, and he's broken every one. He thinks, because he's watched Jerry Springer or somebody, he thinks he's pretty good, relatively speaking. He's good enough to get to heaven. But on God's standards, good enough means good. Good enough means good. And if you're not good, if there is sin in you, if there's wickedness in you, over time it's like a cancer and it will eat you up. And eventually it will utterly destroy you and those around you. And over time means forever, for all eternity. That's why it's so important that we have a relationship with God and His righteousness fills us. Because if we're going to live only 70 years, okay, you're so good, and then you die. And, you know, you died and you had some fun in your life and you're dead and it's over. But if you're going to live forever and ever and ever, and there's some cancer in you eating away at you, there's some sin, some wickedness, some envy, then over time, that'll get worse and worse and all-consuming. And to eventually, you'll be nothing but bitter and hateful. You know, we don't like to hang out with bitter people. Well, would you rather hang out with one or be one? It's worse to be one. And so that's why God gave this law and said, you got to do it perfectly if you want to get to heaven. Because if you've got some badness in you, eventually you will destroy yourself and destroy heaven. So if you break the law, if you covet, if you steal, if you murder, any of the crimes that God specifically mentions in the Bible, then you're not good enough to go to heaven for your own sake and that of everyone else. But God loves us so much, he didn't leave us there. He said, I will forgive you. I will give you a new heart, a clean heart. If you humble yourself enough to say, Jesus, thank you for dying for me. I'm sorry that I've hurt others and I've hurt myself. Please forgive me. Then with that humility, God can make of us new creatures. So one of those commands is do not covet the wealth of the wicked, nor their popularity, nor their drunkenness. God says in Deuteronomy 7, you shall not covet the wealth of the wicked, lest you be snared by it. And you know, Joshua had to put up with one guy named Achan. I don't know if he actually put up with him because he killed him. But Achan was enticed by the entrapments of the Babylonians. And he went and he wrongly, when God said don't, he took some of their gold and their silver. And he coveted that stuff that God said don't. And he rejected God. And it led to his death. He was actually stoned by Joshua and the people. But you know, in the Bible, we have Proverbs and Psalms, beautiful books of worship toward God and warning toward us on how to live. And in both those books, they warn us about coveting. The longest chapter in the whole Bible is Psalm 119. And in that chapter, David wrote, incline my heart to your testimonies and not to covetousness. Turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things. You know, your neighbor might have a car or something you wish you had and you envied, and it might be of real value to your neighbor, but to you, it becomes worthless. In fact, it becomes worse than worthless, because when you covet, you end up with less than what you started with. When you covet, you don't enrich yourself by the things you covet. You lose what you already had, so you end up with less. It's very painful to watch sin eat away at people. Some of the hard-hitting proverbs address this sin. Like Proverbs 12:12, the wicked covet the catch of evil men, but righteousness yields fruit. They covet the catch of evil men. You look at rock stars and all the wealth that they have and all the young people across this country and the world who almost worship them as idols. And they wish, oh, I wish I could be like, and I don't even know who their names are today. And kids are taught to covet and to envy. I mean, it's part of the culture. It teaches them that. The reason these things are wrong in the Bible is because God says they lead to death. And so I've said, don't do this, this, and this because it leads to death. Proverbs 21, the desire of the lazy man kills him. It doesn't make him better. He's lazy, his neighbor works hard, and he covets his neighbor's goods. He loses even what he has. The desire of the lazy man kills him. He covets greedily all day long. But the righteous gives and does not spare. When I was growing up and as a young man, I was trying to think back in my life of an example with food. All right, my mom makes good spaghetti and meatballs. Cheryl, I don't know if it's your recipe or my mother's, but it's fabulous. And you sit down for dinner and you see there are six of us at the table and there are eight meatballs. And you quickly do the math. And you think, what are the chances of me getting two? As a kid growing up, that's the way I thought. And I wanted two of those meatballs. Then I had my own kids. And I love meatballs more than ever. But if I see that one of my kids wants another meatball, I am thrilled for him to have it. Just thrilled. And that is a dramatic change I've noticed in my life. Totally dramatic and unexpected. And it caught me off guard. And I thought, why is it that I don't covet that extra meatball? Why is it that I don't want it in lieu of my son getting it? Is it because I wrote a rule in my daytimer It says, do not covet, especially meatballs. And every morning I read that. And it comes time for dinner, and I know I got to not take that extra meatball. Is that what's enabled me to change my attitude about that? No. What is it that's changed? Love for your child. Love. Love is what enables us to overcome covetousness or any other sin. It's love and only love. Our love for God, and then once that relationship is built, our love for our spouse, our family members, and our friends and others in the body of Christ. And that's what enables us to stop hurting ourselves and hurting others. So when God said in the Bible, do not covet, he had a real good reason for putting that in there. And even though we are not under the law, we're still hurt by sin, as are all those around us when we sin. And I thank the Lord that he hasn't left us just with a set of rules, but he's given us a relationship. And the extent to which we grow to love him and we become aware of his love for us, it's to that extent that we will live victoriously as Christians.
Hey, this is Bob Benyard. If you would like to hear more, you could go to our store online or call us at 1-800-8-NYARDS. That's 1-800-836-9278. Or go to kgov.com, click on the store, and then you can get our Bible studies, or go to the subscriptions where you could subscribe to our sermons and our Bible studies. You could get really fun verse-by-verse studies or topical Bible studies. I think you'll love it.